The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry with Joe McGill. Good morning, good morning. How are you this morning? I'm Joe McGill and you're listening to the Saturday Supplement. And I hope I find you well wherever you are listening to us around the world on RadioKerry.ie or on the traditional wireless 96 to 98 FM. And a very special good morning to Sean O'Sullivan in Port McGee, who is a big fan of Radio Kerry and tunes in all the time. A very special young man. So Sean, hello to you and hello to all your family and your mom, Anne-Marie, and all the O'Sullivans and the Cases and everyone else there in Port McGee. And it meant a lot to hear that you tune into us, so thanks a million for that. So how are you, Sean? Say hello to me. That's good. And I hope you are well and continue to listen to the programme. And I can't wait to meet you sometime as well. Now, very busy programme on the programme this morning. We will have our monthly In Focus slot because it is the first Saturday of the month with renowned photographer Dominic Walsh. We'll also be hearing the first episode of our second series of Kerry Women in Sport. And in this episode, we'll hear from Molly O'Sullivan, an accomplished rower. Molly has represented Ireland on the international stage and more recently started working as a strength and conditioning coach on the professional tennis circuit. We'll also be hearing from John G. O'Dwyer, and he will tell us about some special walks that are taking place in Kerry as part of Pilgrim Paths Week over Easter. If you want to get in touch with us, 066-712-3666. You can text or WhatsApp 083-300-3300. Dominic Walsh joins me in studio. This is becoming a bit of a habit. Dominic, how are you?
I'm not too bad, Joe. Not too bad at all. And I'm delighted to be in the studio and delighted to be interacting with your listeners. And what a day out there. We've got the time change, everything. A lot of rain when I was coming in this morning like that, you know. But when the rain goes away, you see lovely colours and bright skies out there. So it's great. I hope you're snapping now as well yourself, Joe. And you have pictures to talk about from St. Patrick's Day.
I do. I made you a cup of tea there earlier. What do you make of it?
Listeners, he cannot make tea.
Oh,
so whatever anything, he just cannot make tea. But I had to say I liked it when you brought it in first, because I thought I was that you might insult me or hit me, but you can't.
But you decided to insult me on the air. Jeez, and I pride myself on the tea I make.
It's not that bad at all, I'd say.
Yeah, no, there's a very special reason, and we're very excited here this morning because there is a very special reason you're in studio here with us, because we have big news to tell people at home. And I suppose I'll just fill people in. Dominic and I were kind of shocked during the week, because we give out our email for people to send in photos to jmcgill@radiokerry.ie, and we got a very kind of we were thrown back by it, an email, and it came in kind of a very kind of official email from the White House, it says, right? The White House.
Well, I thought we were going to say the White House. Well, we're trying to keep that perfect quiet.
No, but you know, that's what kind of threw us, because it is kind of, you know, like a government kind of really strong kind of things. And some of these things you think, you know, they're spam or whatever. But reading through the email, it turns out that there is a Tim O'Sullivan who works in the White House. He was here on holidays a few months ago now, and he was listening to our In Focus photography slot, and he loves photography and he really enjoyed the program, and since then tunes in online, because you can get the podcast online ever since. And there is another person, Dominic, in the White House that's also into photography, and Tim put him onto this podcast. And who is that person?
That's Mr. Biden himself.
Mr. Joe Biden.
Yeah, but see, like, if you understand now, Joe, like, not to upset you or anything, but it was a photography site he was interested in. You know, he wasn't actually interested in the show as such. So, like, well, I mean, it's my gig as such, really, isn't it?
Yeah, well, there is actually a line here that he likes the mix of photography and the chat and the crack, they put in inverted commas, which I thought was very
actually,
impressive.
I think you read it wrong. I think it was the photography side that he liked, you know, and that. Look, I'd have to agree with you. Look, you're on your own thing this morning.
Right, yes. Right. We're on a high, right? But so that's not only it, because on top of that, Joe Biden is coming to Ireland. And this is where it gets very surreal. And don't worry, we've actually checked all this out because we've, as you can imagine, we've been over and back all week with this since the email. But Joe Biden is coming to Ireland, but not only that, he's coming to Kerry, Dominic, and they want to meet us for a few minutes as well, just to chat about photos.
And the show, and the fact that we did so much for COVID when it happened, that when nothing else was happening, we had people going out, meeting, taking pictures. We were so involved in mental health at the time. And it was just like, as this John O'Sullivan was saying, it was a show that shouldn't have worked because we were talking about photography on radio. Like, what a medium to have. And they were just all excited about it. But, you know.
But I suppose not only that, Dominic, it's the fact that he's coming to Kerry. Like, that's brilliant.
Well, we can't have the locations yet. All we've heard is he's coming to Kerry and he's going to be talking to us. So I'm hoping actually he'll come to Tralee or our side of it as opposed to any place else.
Surely he'll come down the South Kerry side maybe. You don't know. We'll have to figure that out. But I presume there'll be all the Secret Service. Last president to come to Kerry, Bill Clinton, I suppose, was
you
it?
You'll have to send off your passport details.
Why? That's no problem.
All right, okay, right.
Oh, it's a problem for you, is it? But Bill Clinton is probably the last president, isn't
it? Last president. I met him when he was outside in Ballybunnan, gentlemen. Yeah. That time I met him twice out there, when he came twice. And mad, raved about Kerry, only spoke about Kerry. Loved the golf, loved the people, everything around the place.
Yeah. So, well, and like we were talking about this off air, you'll have to give him some kind of a photo as well that represents Kerry or something as well. We were saying the Kerry team, but it might be anything. Yeah, well, it might be anything.
The Kerry team, you know, like it has to be the Kerry team because that's something about Kerry, you know, and that. And like as this John O'Sullivan was kind of hinting that he
it's
like
it's
of
Tim, by the way, well. Tim. Oh, and Tim is originally from Rathmore, yeah.
Oh yeah, it's a chat. So like he was even interested himself. Like he's a local man out there, and he follows. He'd be a good friend with Aidan O'Mahony out there, like that. Yeah. They'd all be the one group.
Yeah. So yeah. Anyway, look, we won't take up any more of the program. We'll keep you informed. But I suppose the big story is that Joe Biden is coming to Kerry. So that's the main thing. And I wonder now, will he bring a camera with him and take a few photos?
I'd be very nervous now meeting my. I would be very nervous meeting now at all. You know, like having a chat. What you say? I know we talk, but I'd be very nervous. But it'd be exciting.
Yeah. I suppose don't mention Mayo. Football is kind of, he's from Mayo originally.
Yeah.
We won't mention the All-Ireland, so that's the main thing we won't mention. Now we're going to have to compose ourselves after that and get on with the programme. And we have, Dominic always brings in his own photos to start the programme with. And Dominic, this is a very special photo and our theme as well for listeners in the in photos was St. Patrick's Day, St. Patrick's celebrations and proud to be Irish and all that. But you have a very particular parade photo that you want to share with. And I should say these are up on Radio Kerry's Facebook page and then the listeners' photos as well. We have the link there to see those photos. So what's the first photo we're going to look at?
Well, the first photograph that I've taken, it's a, it's a picture of St. Patrick's Day parade in Tralee. And it's a unique picture. It's a picture I like. The parades I love doing. I get great pleasure out of doing the parades on that. And it's just that, like, you're in the interaction. Everybody's in great form. Everybody's around, whether it's raining, windy or dry or sunny. Everybody's kind of just there to enjoy themselves. And what I did was I came along and I just happened to be getting ready for the parade to come and the Grand Marshal came along. And the Grand Marshal is our local community guard, Mary Gardner. And to see Mary Gardner coming down, laughing, joking, in the back of a car with her young son sitting beside her and she waving her flag and full of the joys of life. And just all, like, to see her, that she's back in there and she's back out there and she's meeting everybody. Mary's a cancer survivor herself, doing that, and she's quite open about the fact that she's a cancer survivor like that. And I just think she gave great inspiration and great hope to people that, you know, I'm out there, I've survived it, here I am, and just getting back into life. So it's a good picture, it's an action picture. She's not looking into the camera, she's looking away, and it's just pure candid. And I think that's a side of photography where people should start maybe experimenting a little bit on. As I say, the person you're photographing doesn't always have to be looking into the camera. They can be doing something else. It can be an action, or it can be just a shot from the side or from above or below, and it just comes across. So this is, it's like, this is what happened. It's a true life picture, you know. There's no setup, no nothing at all involved in it.
Yeah, and been involved in so many different fundraising aspects, and I'm trying to remember the video. It went viral. Was it The Better Life for Livy Campaign? There was a few different ones.
I'd say we'd get a call. I can't think of it, but we'd probably get a text now straight away. It on top of the Garda station, didn't it?
Well, there's a few ones, because there's another one, and I'm looking at it here, on the actual, there was one on the kind of the estate, you know, and they were all dancing as well.
Oh, that was outside in Tuanavan. I went out to that one. That was the Mamma Mia one.
Yeah. Great moves as well by Mary Gardner.
Involved as well.
Yeah. And that really kind of, I suppose, encompassed what a community person is all about, and then Community Guard as well. It was just brilliant. And inspiration as well.
That was a great little thing to me, because I actually got to throw a bucket of water on top of Mary and the guard. It was great. Like, you know, what you do, you sort
but don't get arrested.
A big bucket of cold water on top of it. Mary was brilliant to deal with, like, you know.
Excellent. And you're kind of on a high all week with not just our news about Joe Biden coming and all that, but you were in a very special place during the week as well. Tell us all about that. And I got no invite, by the way.
Got no invite. Draw something like, listeners, before I start, it's a tough life being a photographer. It really is, do you know, and that. Sony Europe Incorporated made a call and called a photographer in Dublin and called to carry a photographer. And the photographer of Dublin was actually turned out to be a local photographer from Tralee as well, Brendan Moran, a fine sports photographer, top class at his field, really, on that. And I was invited along to go to Tenerife to photograph the Spanish Olympic swimming team, their some of their tennis players, their basketball players, their athletic players. So we were brought over and we got to use all Sony's latest equipment. On that, the newest cameras out, the newest lenses out, you know, it was unbelievable. If I could just say, they brought us over and they brought us into a big room, and it was a huge room like that, you know. And if you look around, they had every camera they've ever made on the professional side, every lens that was there. So there was about 30 photographers over there, and we arrived and you could go in, pick out your camera, pick out your lenses. And it was great for me, because like, it's like driving a car. Some, you get a car you know nothing about, and they say, right, here's the car, take it away. You can drive a car, like everybody can almost drive, but to get a camera into your hand then that I've never held in my life, I've never used their big lenses or anything like that. So to get the opportunity to go and use it and talk to people that produced the camera, people that introduced the firmware into the camera, people that would, you could ask a question and they would say, yes, this is why this is happening, that is why that is happening. Now, when I arrived, I didn't use the camera and I couldn't set up the camera. So what I did was I sat down with the engineer. I said, I've never had one of these cameras in my hand before. Now, like, we'd all use a camera. So I gave him my settings that I use, or the way I shoot my own camera. I shoot Nikon myself, and I told him how I shoot it. And he married those settings into the camera that I was using on that. And there was different types of focusing. There's eye focus. It's unbelievable how it works. And to get the disciplines and to go out and shoot, it was absolutely fantastic. We spent 6.5 hours in 30 degrees of heat, which was, you know, quite difficult to photograph. So the conditions were there. And we could photograph all aspects. And we had unlimited access to the athletes. And you're dealing with athletes that are so professional, you know, that, like, you ask them a question, the athletes, and they tell you what they're doing, they tell you about their stroke, or they might say, we're doing the front crawl, the back stroke, we're going to go on to butterfly. They talk to you, they let you know what they're doing. Now, they're very quick conversations, and then from that, getting that information, you can go and position yourself in the pool or on the athletic track, and you get your pictures there. But
And just on that, like, you mentioned, I suppose, dedication, but swimmers, like, spend hours and hours and hours in the pool, more than any kind of athlete. They have to stay at it for a prolonged period of time. They don't just do an hour session in the morning, an hour in the afternoon. They actually have to spend hours in the pool and all that. But I'm just looking at your photos here, and the way water, you know, can it be difficult to photograph someone in the water when it's splashing around like that? You have to slow everything down, I'd imagine, is it?
It can be difficult. And that's the one thing, like if you're shooting 600mm lens, normally if I was at home doing a match up in Ostertag Park and I had a 600mm lens up there, I'd be shooting maybe about 2,000, maybe 3,000 of a second to get the shots, good action shots. But when you're swimming, if you shoot that fast, it just freezes everything. and the water isn't as dynamic and you don't get the shapes, because when the hand comes out of the water and it lifts out of the water, it drags the water with it. So in some of these shots that you're looking at, and the listeners can see them on the Facebook page, there's a composite collage there of five or six pictures that I've taken on the day on that, and I've homed in on the butterfly, front crawl and backstroke there as well on that. I've slowed it down and I've gone as low as 320th of a second. Now, holding a lens of that size, you know, is quite difficult. How I did it was, I couldn't lie down the pool deck, it was too hot. I laid towels down the deck on that, and I built a little kind of a pyramid out of a towel. So I laid the back of the camera on the towel, and I was able to have the camera on the ground. I was lying on the ground. It was very, very difficult to stay down that low. And I was humming along with the people as they were passing. I had only about maybe a 15, 20 foot window where they swam into and swam out of. So I couldn't get them on one side of it. That was my key spot that I wanted to work on. So when they came into that spot, then I was taking pictures on that. It took a while to get it right. It took me nearly an hour before I started getting what I wanted out of it. But on that, but it was amazing, like that, like when I was taking the shots and it wasn't working, I was able to say to an engineer, look, this is what I'm doing and it's not happening. And they were able to say to me, this is why it's not happening. You've got to go into this setting and set your camera like that. Because actually, we're not working cameras anymore. You're working a computer.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, yes, the skills are there, the basic skills as a photographer there, but you're working a computer on it. So to get the water nice and slow and get the amazing shapes that we got out of it was fantastic.
And tell me this, you were saying there's like 30 photographers. So are you always learning then when you kind of go over there? Do you get a few tips off them, and are you giving them tips? Or
Oh, God, yes. And it's, excuse me, like it was great. Like even like Brendan Moore now would be more of a sports photographer than I would, because it's sport, it's his full-time job,
yeah,
and that's all he does. And even to listen to Brendan taunt other photographers, and I was taunt other photographers like that, it's the simple things you get back, you know. It's the simple things like, you know, like when you're using your camera like that, you know, like go plus or minus to stop and you get such a difference in it. Or maybe just when you're shooting like that, you know, and you're putting the camera down, because like I put down, actually when I was putting down, I put down towels and things like that, you know. And one guy was saying to me, he actually brings a yoga blanket with him, you know, and he has a yoga blanket in the car. So when he's taking pictures and he's lying down through it, he puts his yoga blanket on it, and he's got bean bags. So he puts a bean bag in front of the lens. And you know, like you might think I should have done that anyway if I had it there. But it just shows you how other photographers work like that.
Yeah.
And we're all in the same industry. We've all the same situations with editors. We've all much the same contracts, whether you're in Ireland or England or like the Nordic countries were there as well, and there were some Spanish photographers there. And that their contracts are nearly all the same.
Yeah.
You know?
And you know what's amazing there as well? It's all different languages, but you're speaking the same language because you're speaking about photography, which is universal then.
Oh, it is, yes. Yeah. It is, like, because like what we were doing is that you'd get a picture and you'd go to a photographer beside you that couldn't speak English. You just show them the picture. And straight away, we just flick down to the settings.
Yeah.
And they can get the settings like that. And you can see them going to their camera and they're setting up. Don't know what we're speaking to each other, but we're just showing the universal language of photography, do you know?
And final question, when you were over there now and you were worried about your poor knees getting burnt on the heat and all that, putting the towel down, were you thinking of us freezing our bottoms off back here in Kerry?
Well, do you know something, like, to be honest now, Joe, I'd have to be very honest, like, it was all work and no play.
I don't know how honest that is. I can hear it in your voice. Dominic, sounds brilliant. And next time, you know who we are. And I have my passport, so, you know, you could offer another invitation. We could go along and capture it and go to the sunnier climes of Tenerife. But for now, we're going to be looking after the break at your photos that you sent in to us. And the theme was St. Patrick's celebrations and proud to be Irish. And we got some wonderful colour, as you can imagine, in the photos we got in. So we'll be looking at those after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
That's what you're listening to, and you can get in touch with us at 066 712 3666. You can text WhatsApp 083-300-3300. Lots of people getting in touch saying it's great news that Joe Biden is coming to Kerry, and also Dominic and I are going to be presenting him with a photo, because he listens to the podcast via a Rathmore native in the White House. Tim O'Sullivan turned him on to it, which is, there's always a Kerry connection, which is great. And we will ask you, I suppose, what photos do you think, Dominic, of all the photos he talks about here, what photo we should present to the President? So let us know, 0667123666. You can text the WhatsApp 083-300-3300. Bernadette got in touch there. No, but it's after going off my screen, but I'll open up that again in a moment. We are going to be looking at your photos as well that you sent in to us. Anonym Day Joe, I better get your autograph soon before you start rubbing shoulders with presidents and others from the talk. Bon, La Masse, Bernadette. I wonder if that Bernadette Nerida, or poetry woman. We'll see. Don't worry, I won't forget you, Bernadette. I won't forget you. Right, so we're going to look at these photos, Dominic, that were sent in to us. And again, it's always great to see the variety we get and the kind of different angles on the theme we set. So was St. Patrick's Day around the celebrations? Did you get to many parades, or what was your
deal? Did three parades. I did the 6 a.m. parade in Dingle.
Oh, yeah?
Which is, they call it the dawn parade, pre-dawn on that. And there was a great amount of people up there. It was lovely to listen to it like that. Cold morning on that. A lot of rain out
there. Yeah, the weather wasn't great, yeah.
Weather was not great that day, so I did that. I did the Tralee Parade, which was excellent. And nipped out to Ballyhigh, and I did the Ballyhigh Parade. Another good little parade.
Yeah. I actually was in a float, because my brewery, we did it in Waterville. And we made up a whole float and everything. It was great, all cracked.
And what was your theme?
Well, we were dressed as in our Lederhosen, you know, like the German beer men.
Yeah.
And we were trying out sweets to everyone. We had loads of sweets, and there was great crack. And it was a great parade. It was great colour. And the Minshed did a great float. They got best float. They did a great job. New Minshed in Waterville, so that was great to see as well. And loads of community involvement. And that's the thing about Patrick's Day. People get a great buzz out of it, and it's a great crack. And even though, like, it was very bad now, like, because we were in shorts, you know, but it dried off for sections of it. But the amount of kids and everyone there, and even families had their cars lined along, you know, and kids were looking out the window, and I was trying to get sweets in the window, so I'm trying to throw it, like. But, no, it was brilliant crack, yeah.
But, like, I sat for years myself, and you see the parades, and you go out to some villages normally, and you mightn't see a lot of people around.
Mm-hmm.
Then you might go out and cover St. Patrick's Day Parade, and they're all over the place, and they're around, and they're coming out with these amazing floats that they've probably, some of these people have put months of effort into making these floats like that. They're fantastic. We'll put all these different themes on that, like your team now sounds like when you come together and you do something, you're popping sweets out to people. Can you imagine the interaction of the kids and the sweets come to them like that, you know, like. And they've got the Minshed, another great organisation, and getting involved in things like that, you know, and producing floats on that. It's all about the uniqueness of it.
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine Americans and people from other countries, and they're appearing over here in St. Patrick's Day Parade? Yes, you've got the Dublin Parade, which is amazing, and they've got, it's very professionally done.
Yeah.
Then you come down here to Kerry, and you see these parades, which are just total enjoyment is what they get out of it. They really don't care about, not they don't care about the standard, but the standard that they can do is the best standard they can, but what they're getting out of it is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, and it's also, we're in a tourism county, like, it is the traditional start of the tourist season, and where some people might have been hibernating over the winter, getting ready, all of a sudden everything wakes up and away we go.
Like, when I was in Dingle, I met Americans and people, and I'm not saying the Americans, there was English, there was a lot of people over there on that, and they came out in the morning because they'd heard, when they were coming to Dingle and they were there for St. Patrick's Day, that they had to get up for the parade in the morning, and it was just, they're going to go back now and say, Joe, we did know, we were up now at 5:30 in the morning getting ready to go out and see the Dingle Fife and Drum Band, like, parading around the village like that, you know, in the morning. So it brings back memories too as well.
Yeah, definitely. Right, let's look at your photos that you sent in to us at jmcgill@radiokerry.ie. It was nice to see a great effort by members of the Ragged Road Drama Group produce a colourful float for St. Patrick's Day at Causeway. It was photo by Moss Joe Brown, and very colourful photos again. The old trailer there done into a float, with all the tricolours and the different balloons and everything like that. A great photo by Moss Joe Brown.
It is, and you know, something like, all it is, it's pure chaos when you look at it, but it's absolutely fantastic. There's buntings, there's flags, and you know they're done up with their shirts and ties and glasses and musical instruments. It's great to see it, and that's what I'm saying. It's the chaos in it that makes it look fantastic. It's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, brilliant. Hi, Joe and Dominic. Love the show. Here are some pictures for this week. Number one is waiting for Patrick. Number two, a room with a view. And number three, a proud tradition. And that comes in from Nora Nelligan. And the first photo is a group of girls on a platform there, and they're all looking happy and delighted. And again, making a great effort, you know, having the colourful wigs, the tricolour wigs, the hats, the scarves, and then we have a teleporter. I presume that's the room with the view. And there's kind of a mannequin on top of it. And then we have the tractor. And there's some great vintage clubs as well around the county as well. And they do a lot as well during Patrick's Day, where they kind of, you know, add so much more to it. Because that's very interesting when you see one of those vintage machineries pass you, like tractor or car or whatever.
Yeah. Like, I think Billy Hyde now had vintage cars outside like that, you know. And when you look at it, and It feels bad when you actually recognise that you had one of these cars growing up, and you see one of these cars coming down towards, like, you know, like it makes you can be pushing on in years. Like Nora's pictures there are great, and it just shows that, like, putting a little bit of a name, like a room with a view, it changes your aspect when you hear that from a photograph, as just saying there's a photograph there with a teleporter like that. It's lovely to see that, like, you know, and the people looking, waiting for the parade to come along and just taking pictures like that. Again, it's the uniqueness of these just candid pictures of work. And of course, the farm machinery, you know, I think it's great to see them plodding off along like that, knowing the noise of the old tractors. It always gets the kids going, doesn't it?
Yeah, we'll do one more before we go to the break. And I'd say Sheila Quirk was actually on her holidays during Patrick's week, because she gives us photos from Valencia City. And she loves the show, and Sheila is from Castle Gregory. And real scenic show. I love the black and white one through the trees, and it's kind of an old style city landscape. The architecture looks unbelievable in Valencia. And that last photo could be on a fancy restaurant wall, is the way I describe it. It's brilliant, isn't it?
Well, I tell you something, if I was given marks for photographs this week on the quality of photographs, like, these are absolutely amazing.
Yeah, Sheila's very talented, isn't she?
Yeah. There's unbelievable like that. And I just love the fact that she thought about shooting through the fountain and that particular angle to go along and get the building in the background like that, you know. I personally am a lover of black and white. It takes the busyness out of a picture, and you just see the image itself on that, you know, like, it's great. I love that. I love going through the trees as well on that. It's just shows that, like, the trees are almost silhouetted through it, and you're looking, they're pure black, and you can see the road up along it like that, you know. And the colour one, you know, love the two black and white ones. The colour is probably coming a close third there like that, you know, but great to see it.
And black and white as well, say, if you're taking pictures of people as well, it kind of gives a nostalgic feel or something as well, doesn't it?
It does. And think about, if you're shooting black and white, you don't have to be worrying about light as much. In other words, you could go into somebody's house and take pictures in black and white, and you wouldn't have to worry about yellow casts, or, like, if the speed is wrong, you can just slow the speed down and use the ambient light is there, because the colours make no difference. So it's a great medium if you're taking pictures inside the house and you don't have access to flashes and the lighting isn't great. Just take it and convert it to black and white, and you'll be very, very surprised what comes out.
Yeah, excellent. Right, we'll go to a break, and we'll be looking at more of your photos after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
That's what you're listening to, and Dominic Walsh is with us for our monthly In Focus photography slot. Lots of messages coming in about Joe Biden coming to Kerry, and the fact that he was listening to our podcast as well, our photography slot with Dominic. Listener suggests that we should a song we should play instead of a picture, and there should be Paint Me a Picture of Ireland, sang by Margot. Paint Me a Picture of Ireland, what's that one? Paint Me a Picture of Ireland. Didn't Dolores Keane, Sean Keane, didn't he sing that? I thought something like that.
I'm not too sure. I'm not creating the music side, you know, and that, like,
yeah, I thought you were an all-rounder, you know. But I think we'll be doing enough to give him a picture rather than we're singing him a song as well. Will we do a duet?
I tell you now, if I had to sing a song for that man, I wouldn't be able to open my mouth with the nervousness of being beside him.
You're getting very overawed by it.
I am, yes, I am. It's unusual, Joe. Like, it's like, you know, look, when it comes out after the event, I'd be talk away about
you'll
it.
You'll be happy out there, yeah.
Once I can bring my own camera, I don't mind.
I'm sure he'll pose for you, but don't take a selfie anyway, that's the main thing. Now, look at your photos, and our theme was St. Patrick's Day. Hi, Joe and Dominic. My photos of St. Patrick's Day theme is Tarbert Bridewell, lit up in green for the celebrations. That comes in from Brendan Cassan, and Brendan is another very talented photographer, and I like the way that poster is in there as well. It kind of gives you context as well, and the lighting up in green, which I think is a brilliant idea, lighting up our monuments and buildings in green.
I think it's fantastic. Like, they're doing it around the world.
Yeah.
You know, like the uniqueness of being Irish. Now, I particularly like this picture, and I like the way they've it lit, where they've the bridewell is kind of, it's back from the main road, and there's a wall in front, and there's an arched gate in front. And the fact that the bridewell itself is green on that, and you've got this black sky around it, and the front entrance is just the ordinary grey stone. Like, the composition there is absolutely excellent. The further one away, it doesn't work as much, but the tight one really works as a good picture. And you know what this shows? That, like, you don't have to go to amazing lengths to get very good pictures. You just got to be aware of your surroundings and say, right, this is here, go out, stand there, look at what's happening, and take a picture. And you've time to take it, you've time to retake it, you've time to recompose it during that. So, like, it's good. I think it's a great picture.
Yeah, the symmetry is good in it as well. It just reminds me of when we were in school, kind of a school play, we'd have the different lights, you know, and that time budgets were small, so you'd have to come up with something, you know, on the light to make it green. You know, the old 7-Up bottles?
Yes.
You'd cut them, yeah. You'd cut them out, the plastic, and put it on. I don't know how safe or anything that was now, but...
I don't think it was very safe.
It did give it a green tint.
Did you just...
Yeah, amazing to kind of think around it. Hello, Joe and Dominic. We had a great St. Patrick's Day in Castle Island with a lovely dry day and a fun-packed parade. Was that one you were at, Castle Island? Were you at that?
No, I was not at Castle Island, no.
I'm sending a few photos of items that caught my attention. The first is of St. Patrick greeting people as he marches through the streets. In the second photo, the vintage red Ford truck looks new as it slowly makes its way up the town. And lastly, we have bikes enjoying themselves on their motorcycles. Thanks again, Margaret O'Shea. Now, Margaret, I think, has really captured St. Patrick's Day from all the different kind of angles as well. I'd say nearly every parade has a St. Patrick, does it?
Every parade has Patrick, or a couple of St. Patrick's
Days, yeah.
Which, like, they kind of appear out there. Now, the St. Patrick, he's really got good clothes in him, like, and, like, he's got the good cap.
They look like they came from the Vatican, some of the stuff he's wearing.
Really good, like, and the beard is actually good, like that, on that St. Patrick's going off around there. I love the Ford trucks. I love that Ford truck there and the cars behind. Look, the colour of it, like that.
It's a real American kind of.
And think about these trucks like that. When I photograph trucks like that, if I ever photograph them, I really go close to the front of it, because you can see the grills in the front and get in there, because there's great detail. Like, they're really kind of ostentatious in what they do. Like, it's massive, like, the effort they put in, like that. It's lovely. The bikes. Anybody knows me, I'm into a bit of motorbiking myself. Do you know on that hand?
You're a bit of a Hells Angels.
A Hells Angels myself. I like the three bikes there coming down there and the bike.
What kind of bikes are there? There's a Honda 50 and the other two then. I'm not too familiar.
I'd say there's one there. It's probably 25cc.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. It almost looks like one of the pedal ones.
The ones and that, and there's a little small, and then a little motorbikes that were around for years.
Yeah.
And they're a great mode of transport, like that, you know?
Yeah, very much.
We used to go to the bog when we were young, like a man used to come up at 150, and we'd be up at the bog, and he'd have a kind of a, I was going to say it was a top box on the back. It was not. It was a box, a wooden box.
Yeah.
I'd say it might have been ones for exporting fruit.
Yeah.
And he'd be up there, he'd do his work, and he'd pile that with turf, and he'd have a bit of a fish netting around, he'd pile that on top of it, and he'd come down, he'd be going off down. And at that time, I never realised how unique it was that, why wouldn't you try and get a picture of something like this going down? And he'd go down his Honda 50 and down the bumps and everything like that, and like, and you'd go down some days and the turf would fall off, you'd have to stop and pick it and put it back up like that. But he'd go along and he'd build the turf up like a pyramid on top of it, and then he'd tie a rope across the top sod, so that sod, when it was tied, supported every sod underneath it, so it was good and tight. It was just, it's great.
Let's guess, the seats are so comfy on the Honda 52, aren't they? When the sun hits them, they're lovely and warm as well. It just reminds me as well, when we're in Thailand and see about four or five people on the bikes, so what they used to be able to carry on the bikes was fairly impressive.
They're longer bikes,
are they?
They're actually made for that specific purpose.
Right.
We were in Thailand now as well, and there was a guy who had a bed on the back of it.
A bed?
A single bed on the back of it. And what he'd done was, the bed kind of sat He changed it so like it was the long part that he had, and let's say it was a 4 foot bed, so it was 4 foot wide, and he had a bed long, but he took out the middle timbers in it.
Yeah, so he could roll it,
and then he had rope around it, and the rope went around his shoulder.
Oh, geez.
And so, and he was going along with the bed on it, you know, and the mattress was sticking out, it was wound up, and he had that tied onto it, and he was going along. Uniqueness.
Good morning, Joe and Dominic. My first pick, Cara needs a holiday. Our granddaughter, Eileen and Pat. The second photo is the garden at Tavekilla. The third photo, Sunday evening, first sunset of summertime 23. I spotted Donal and Victoria looking out to sea, and my thoughts were as clear as a day. As day, come back to Erin soon with Sebastian and Kieran. And I love this photography slot. Thank you so much. And this is Agnes O'Sullivan, and she's talking about Donal, her son, and Victoria, her daughter-in-law. And there's some wonderful family kind of occasions. The woman, the little girl and the suitcase in that kind of airport setting is really, really poignant. And
like, even when I was away now during the week on that, like, you see these little suitcases come around and little kids on them. And amazing enough, they're actually seats as well.
All right.
So they sit on the cases.
Oh,
so
handy,
they're
yeah.
going to walk, and if you get a bit tired, they can sit in it, or they can sit it and put their legs up. And she's.
That's a very good idea, because remember, there Dublin Airport was like overrun there at certain stages. You'd no place to sit. So at least that's something for the kids to
for
sit
the kids
down.
To sit
yeah.
on, and then like you see them when the child gets tired of walking, they sit on it, and the parents can pull that case.
Ah.
See, Joe, I'll teach you something.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, yeah. That, every day's a learning day.
It's every day's yeah. a learning day, and I love the shot of the flowers as well, is quite nice. I like the shot of the two. That's kind of very, it's a moment really, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's all you can say about that shot, like they're looking in like that, you know. And look, we'd all love to have our families home and things like that, you know, when you see it like that, but
yeah,
that's the nature of it.
Yeah, it's very poignant, that photo, isn't it?
It is, yeah, yeah, it is.
And silhouettes as well, even though we can't see expression or whatever,
no.
you can still see the kind that, of emotion.
That tells the story. It is, yeah. You can see the emotion, that picture like that. And you can, a lot of silhouettes, you'd be very surprised when yeah. you look at them like that. Because the brain is unique. If the brain looks at a blank wall, it will try and change to something that you can understand. So yeah. if there's cracks or nooks and lobs, create a shape. So when you look at a picture like this, your brain works to give you an emotion. So if you're thinking the emotion side, it just automatically gives you something and think of emotion, but your emotion might be slightly different to mine
yeah.
on that. So that's how the brain works. Great picture.
Yeah, and just this symmetry again, I think, is fairly impressive the way it's all done. So that's brilliant. Right, so they are our. Oh, we've actually a few more. I nearly forgot. There was a few late ones in. I better get to them quickly before I forget. We've three different photos, and they were sent to me, and I'll let you know who they were sent to in a moment. But first, let's look at them, Dominic. So we have the looking out the window with the shamrock, and that's kind of really fitting the St. Patrick's theme as well. It's kind of a thinking outside the box.
It's a thinking outside the box. They're inside there, and they're inside in the car, and they're looking out. Because, you know, like, at some of the day, like, there was a bit of bad weather, and it was a bit chilly. Even though the sun was out at times, it was quite chilly, and people were sitting in cars, and I could see a lot of people sitting in cars when they were there on that. And it just shows that when you're down there, and you're in the car, and you're looking out, and you say, oh, there's a shamrock on the window there. Let's shoot through and get the parade and have the shamrock actually up there in the corner. So it's great. It was lovely to see it.
Yeah, and I have the message to go there. Hello, Joe. Here are some of the photos. Our daughter, Nora O'Carroll, on St. Patrick's Day in the Causeway and Ballyhigh parades. Apologies if photos are slanted, as Nora was in a moving tractor in the parade. Many thanks, JP O'Carroll, Causeway. So she's a really kind of an action photographer there, you'd call that Dominic as well.
So Nora, really, now Nora, our young lady, she'd have to get Young Photographer of the Month, I'd say, with a picture like that, because it's a great picture. I'm telling you, it's absolutely fantastic, and to think of taking a picture like is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, and also this is Ballyhigh, I presume. We see St. Patrick again on that with the crowd behind it.
Yeah, and I was at St. Patrick's, and I seen that particular St. Patrick. He was a gas man coming down. He was in no hurry to finish that parade, let me tell you that. He was enjoying it so much, waving to people, going left and right and going around and, you know, blessing people. And it's amazing, as he was blessing people, everybody was nearly blessing themselves. So, like, it was good.
And there was also another photo then, which was the house with the tree flags in it as well, which was very innovative by that house. And that's another thing we have to say, is to praise the businesses, Dominic, in the windows, and, you know, the effort they make there as well, you know, in towns, the paintings in the windows and all that.
But see, like, St. Patrick's Day now is kind of a week, isn't it?
Like, in well, it fell weeks. Brilliantly this time as it well, just, didn't it? Yeah. It was the Friday, so it really, yeah. really
and,
worked well.
Like, and the businesses do, because, and what people do actually, and the businesses don't realise it, people stop and look at their windows and they admire the windows.
Yeah. You know?
So it's lovely to see it. And it's just, oh, look, it just creates a bit of colour for a time that hasn't got great colour this time of the year. So it's lovely to see that. And it's, as you say, it's the start of our tourist season and our tours come around and we can mingle with everybody and just enjoy the day.
Yeah, and we'd also John Patrick or JP sent a message to us last month, Dominic, so I want to read that as well. It was, hello Joe, many thanks for mentioning Des and Nora O'Carroll. And Nora O'Carroll is our photographer, young photographer of the month this month. Photos last Saturday morning with Dominic. Nora was thrilled because it was her birthday, so happy belated birthday there. By the way, my name goes as JP O'Carroll, in case you think I'm all high and mighty with a big long name of John Patrick. I'm not great with the technology stuff, but learning every day anyway. Thanks again, JP from Cosme. We would never think you're all high and mighty. There's nothing wrong with a bit of John Patrick as well.
There's nothing wrong with John Patrick as well. But you know something, like, as you said, we're all learning something. I think we're all not great with technology at some stage in our lives. Even now, I'm still not great at certain things on it. But you learn. You learn every day, and it's great to get involved.
Yeah, and I'd be learning to make a better cup of tea for Dominic, who has very high standards when it comes to tea. Your photo of the month.
We have two photos of the month.
Right.
Now, we have the funny photo of the month. Our yeah. humour photo of the month has to be the three boys and the motorbikes.
Right.
Going off down. It was great. That was by Margaret O'Shea.
Yeah, beautiful.
I loved
photo.
It. It was great.
Yeah.
Margaret, it was interesting that you actually thought about taking the picture from that particular angle.
Yeah.
And it worked. And the guys are going in and out and around like that. You could have easily just passed them because, like, they were coming up, people, like, they could have moved from you.
And also on that, like, she did well to kind of get out in front of people as well, because they'd yes. be fairly crowded. Yeah,
yeah, that, so yeah.
Good, yeah.
That's the one thing about a photographer. You need to be a little bit,
yeah.
you know. But when you do,
is that the technical term?
Get,
yeah.
get out there like that. But when you do put your foot out, you need to look left and right.
Yes,
on
and
that.
Don't get your foot taken. Yeah,
and it's not because a car could be passing, but somebody else could be walking beside you, because
okay.
it happens to me a lot. I'm so in tuned and taking a picture. I've walked into walls. I've walked into cars, doors. You name it. I've walked into players. I've done all that taking pictures. So you've got to be wary of that. And our picture of the month, which I thought the composition, the colour, the uniqueness of it, and the time and patience to pick it out, was the Brinley Cassan with the Tarbert Bridewell.
Okay,
I just thought
good.
it was Irish. It's really St. Patrick's Day, and it just says, and that building has an amazing history.
Well, well done, Brendan. That is our photo of the month. Now, our theme for next month, Dominic.
Yeah, I think, you know, with Biden and all like that, you know, I think, like, you have to say excited.
Excited.
Whatever you're going to be
good.
Excited about
yeah.
next month, whatever makes you excited, whether it's pictures of yourself or somebody else, of the sky. Of
a bit
the
weird
landscape.
That you'd be excited by yourself, but yeah. because, of course, it's Easter, so excited. A bit of a pun there, yeah.
It's
play on
Easter's
words.
Easter's coming up like
yes.
that, you know.
Excited. So it can be excited or excited, whatever way you want.
You want to. And getting
yeah.
close to those eggs, take pictures of it, people eating them, Joe, people are walking. Like, I think, like, we give themes. And
yes.
Like, and our theme is a guide just to get people thinking. And that's why we give, let's say, a theme every month when we're actually doing it like that, you know. But it could be any. It could be a football game that everybody's excited at the end of it like that, you know. Like, and, like, please send them in. We look at them all and we see them all. And what people don't realise, you're sending your picture into, you think you're sending just a Radio Kerry, but you're not. There's people around the world looking at these pictures, as I say, and they're looking at what Kerry has to offer. Like the St. Patrick's Day parade pictures, like, there's people in America and the world all over looking at these, so it's uniqueness.
Brilliant, because we're excited, because we told you at the start of the programme, the news, Joe Bryan is not coming just to Ireland, he's coming indeed to this county, and Dominic and I are actually going to meet him as well, because he listens to our podcast, because Tim O'Sullivan from Rathmore, who works in the White House, turned him onto it, so it's actually, we're very excited here this morning as well. We'll go to break with more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
That's what you're listening to. Dominic Walsh is still in studio with us. If you want to get in touch with us, 066-712-3666. You can text or WhatsApp 083-300-3300. Maybe you have a suggestion for us, what photo you think we should present to Joe Biden when we meet him, when he's here. So let us know, 083-300-3300 for your text and WhatsApps. Now, we are having a special documentary launched in the programme this morning. It's Kerry Women in Sport, the second series of it. But we're also in the process of, it's actually completed and we'll be airing it in the next few weeks. It's on the lighthouses of Kerry, and because of that I asked Dominic to just bring a few photos you have, Dominic, of lighthouses, because they're unique structures, aren't they? And they're usually located in the most scenic parts, but remote parts of the county. And like, I can't wait for people to hear this documentary, because the stories the lighthouse keepers have, the families that lived on them, you know, what they had to endure, how strong they had to be in body and mind to survive on these is quite breathtaking. But even looking at your photos, you can see why they had to be so strong in both body and mind.
But lighthouses, like, they're in a unique area, really, as you say. And the thing about lighthouses, they're not just a lighthouse, they're a safety house, they're a safety light. They're for mariners at sea to find their way and locations back in on that. And, you know, something like, when I go out and I take pictures of lighthouses like that, I've just bought in two lighthouses this morning, and I've gone for Phoenix Lighthouse and I've gone for Village Island Lighthouse on that.
Cromwell Point, yeah.
Cromwell Point. Both actually subsequently were taken by drones on that. But like, when you go out to Phoenix, there's actually, when you look at it, and there's no two lighthouses alike. The light blinks, no two light blinks are the same, so that they're kind of different. If you didn't
it's
know,
called the character.
It's the character, yeah. Is what they call, yeah. It. So like, yeah. If you came across a lighthouse and you didn't know where you were, and if you timed the lights, you can actually look through the Almanac book, I think it's the Almanac's book on, yeah. That, and you'd know the lighthouse you were at by,
yeah.
Walking out.
It's amazing. I didn't even know that we did it, like, yeah, and it's just amazing the way they all have their own character.
All different characters. Yeah. Then if you go to a place then and you can, and the light is out and you can see the lighthouse, the shape of that lighthouse, that uniqueness shape, that is not replicated any place else, so you can actually tell the shape by a lighthouse.
Yeah.
A unique lighthouse that people know about is the Fastnet Lighthouse below, on that, which is the most amazing lighthouse actually off our coast on that. It's the second lighthouse built there on that. They built one first. This is the second one that comes up. It's an amazing structure altogether like that. Now, the thing that I find about Phoenix is it's kind of it's a low lighthouse. It's not a very tall lighthouse as lighthouses go. You think they're very,
yeah,
you know, they're very tall.
A lot of them are, yeah.
A lot of them are,
yeah.
Quite tall. So when you come into Tralee Bay and you're looking, you can see the lighthouse in the distance on that and going through it. And like, there's a garden on it. Like, there's living quarters and people used to live there and go out there. Now, even though it's only a short distance from the sea, people are actually still could get stuck out there for days on end because due to the weather.
Yeah, and that's what I was thinking about, you know, when you're taking photos of them. I think the drone really adds another dimension, because you want to see the actual location these lighthouses are on as well, to show, you know, how impressive they are, because sometimes they're just built in these most inhospitable rocky formations or whatever, you know.
I use the drone now particularly a lot now when I'm doing some lighthouses and taking pictures of them like that, because, and I use the drone and I'd normally fly around 50, maybe 100 feet. I keep it low because I think that's a better view of it and you can see more of it. Whereas if you're up too high, it turns into a Google Maps. If you're down too low, it's only a picture that you take yourself. So I kind of have my happy medium when I like taking shots of lighthouses like that, you know. But it's the uniqueness and it's the space. You can see the high walls around it. Everything inside is protected. You can see the colours on that. If the light is going, it just really sparkles off in like that, you know. It's lovely. And the thing about it is, when you go up from a height and you're taking it, you get the water to the foreground, you have the lighthouse and you have the background of the water, the lushing of the waves and everything like that. You can get just an unbelievable amount there.
Yeah, yeah. And the Cromwell Point one is just absolutely stunning. And I actually did a lot of the interviews up on the tower there, on the balcony where you're looking around. You're looking 360 around. And it's just so, so, so impressive. But again, it's about the people as well that we're going to tell these stories. So the documentary is called The Lighthouses of Kerry. And we featured the Tiaracht, which is an absolutely amazing structure, and there's a lot of industrial kind of engineering that went on out there as well, including a little railway, one of the most westerly, if not the most westerly one in Europe. And we have covered Cromwell Point in Valentia, Tarbert, and we've covered the one in Phoenix. We know it's not technically a Kerry lighthouse, but we do talk about the one on the Bull Rock as well, because it's off our Kerry, yeah. Coast. And then we have the Skellig's Rock one,
yes,
as well,
yeah.
Which had two as well, you know. One went out of commission when the one on the Tiaracht was actually being built at the same time. So there's history that goes back beyond the famine as well, and how these lighthouse keepers actually lived better than people on the mainland at that time, because they were building living in stone structure walls. A lot of tragedies in Skellig, the Skellig Svea Hill. You had two kids actually lost their lives off there, you know, playing, yeah, because families lived in these,
yep.
Places. So it's absolutely amazing. But Dominic, you're going to stay with me because I want to talk about your archive photo that you've brought with you. So we'll have more after the news at 10, and Dominic will be with us again.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
That's what you listened to, and if you've just joined us, you're welcome on to the second hour. And if you've just joined us, you missed the big news we announced this morning. Dominic Walsh is here with me from a renowned photography slot in Focus, and we got an email during the week from, of all places, would you believe, and we were very sceptical, I have to tell you, at the start, but it has since, after phone calls being received and everything else, has since turned out to be true, that Joe Biden listens to our podcast and on In Focus Photography Slot. The reason he does is Tim O'Sullivan. Many of you know him in the Rathmore area. He's working in the White House. He tuned into our podcast while he was here on holidays, tuned in live, then started listening to the podcast. And then another man that's into his photography is Joe Biden. So he showed him that. And because he's coming to Ireland, he's going to be coming to Kerry as well. So that's the other big news. And Dominic and I are going to meet him, and we were asking, what photo do you think we should give him? A photo of something, I suppose, that represents Kerry. And we've been getting loads of messages in to say that it's very exciting. And speaking of exciting, that is our theme for next month, so it can be exciting or exciting. So depending on it, it is Easter, so maybe there's Easter egg theme, or it's something that excites you. Just a few on the lighthouse as well. We mentioned we're going to be having our lighthouse documentary coming up, and people are asking, when is it on? And I will let you know, it is in the next few weeks, but I'll let you know the exact date closer. The time, good morning Joe, enjoying the show. And that comes in from Patrick. Hello Patrick, how are you? More asking about the lighthouse, when is it on? Hi guys, I believe the main distinguishing feature of a lighthouse is its colour pattern. Good man Tom, you know your lighthouses. Well done on that. And then lots more messages that I will get to shortly. Dominic is still with us, and Dominic, we are talking now about your archive photo, and a very gregarious, happy looking man with a beard, and a very famous man as well, no longer with us sadly, but what is this photo all about?
Well, this is of a very famous man and a good mentor of mine when I started out in photography, Padraig Kennelly Sr., a gentleman who passed away a while ago like that, you know, and who was a man before his time. He was into filming and he was into photography, and, you know, and he foresaw that, like, that there's a time when you can take a picture and just send it out without going to process it and things like that, you know. This photograph of Padraig Kennelly was taken with my first digital camera on that, when I got the camera.
Wow.
And it was so unique, that to get a camera that didn't have film inside in it, and
the quality,
this is actually what came off the camera, and there's no changes made to it. This is what came off. It's pure green. There's a massive green cast in it. There's a lot of noise, which kind of looks as if it's blurred on that in stages like that, you know, but it just works quite well as a picture. Just to tell you what I was doing around this time, I'd go and cover a news job, and I had my picture, I'd take my film with me, and I'd produce the film and get it done. And what I might do then is that I'd have a processing kit in the boot of my car. I'd have hot water bottles inside there.
Why would you have hot water bottles?
I'd have hot water bottles. So what I'd do is I'd fill about 7-8 hot water bottles with water, and I'd have flasks. So what I would do is that I'd have all the water inside, I'd have the hot water bottles wrapped, because I would keep my temperature very warm. So because when you process film and you put in the chemicals, you need that temperature, the constant temperature.
Oh.
And the thing about it, the higher the temperature, you burn the eggs, we'd call a burner, or you'd cremate them. In other words, instead of waiting the full 5 minutes or 8 minutes to get it done, you could have it done in 2 minutes, because you'd bake the film and it would process so fast.
Okay.
Probably wasn't an ideal way of doing it,
yeah,
but when you're in a hurry, you would do that. Like, the negs weren't the issue, it was getting the picture out. And what you do then is... Negatives is what film cameras would call it like that, you know. And what you do is you'd go along then, and you'd process these in the boot of your car. Then you'd get into the car, and what I had in my car, I had holes in the roof, because the car I had bars going through the roof to hold up the roof and the inside of the car, called the canvas.
Yeah.
And I used to have holes in that, and I used to have hangers.
What kind of a car was this?
It was, I trust something. It's probably an old car. I'm trying to think what it was now. Could be.
It had a canvas roof.
It had a canvas roof inside in it.
Oh.
Do you know?
Yeah.
And it was a very old car. I couldn't afford a new car. The car must have been as old as it's been now when I got it like that.
Sounds like it. You needed hot water bottles to heat it. So
and I had that inside. So, like, the hot water bottles would keep the temperature warm. That'd keep all my liquids warm.
Yeah.
And the more liquid you had, the longer that temperature would last. So if you had one hot water bottle there, it wouldn't keep the temperature long that way. So if you had a multitude of them inside, it would keep it warm.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd work like that. You'd go in then, you'd get your clothes hanger, and you'd put it up over the mirror or whatever, and you'd start driving then. And you'd have the heaters on then to try and dry that film.
Yeah.
And by the time you get back home, then you have a negative scanner. You'd have to put it in and scan each negative. That could take about 5 or 6 minutes, over and back, over and back, over and back. And then, of course, all the mistakes you would have made would have come out. Then if the chemicals weren't, let's say, processed right, when you see these washes, these streaks, these lines in the negative, and you'd be trying to go left or right that to get it done. But then moved off and digital came out and our lives changed overnight.
Yeah.
Now the quality wasn't great. So this was the first picture I took of a digital camera with no film, and I could go to my computer, put it into my computer and send it out. It was absolutely, it was mind changing. It was like going from, let's say, having no electricity in your house to having electricity in your house like that, you know.
Yeah. What amazes me about this, you've two photos, you've one above, one below, and the one above is where Mr. Kennedy is so animated and having the crack, and the other one is a very composed portrait style. It just shows the variety you can do with someone that can have that range in themselves as well.
Well, there's actually a reason. That's a very good question. There's a reason that where one is posed and one is animated is we were trying to work out the speed that we could take pictures before they would blur out.
Okay.
So the one from below is in pose, that's taken a portrait mode.
Yeah.
The one above then would be sports mode. So his hands were actually waving around.
Okay.
In that.
Yeah.
And so his hands are still in it.
And
so
it didn't blur.
It didn't blur. Yeah. So you could work out how fast actually. I think we were going up to about maybe 200 of a second is the fastest you could get. After that, then the hands were just pure blur like that. So that's the reason why that one is with movement and one is a portrait. You know,
it's a great photo, absolutely brilliant. Dominic, pleasure as always. So our theme for next month?
Our theme for month is excited, as in Easter eggs, you know, and that I think it'd be great. But I think we get loads of pictures in now of exciting things now.
Excellent. And you can email them to jmcgill@radiokerry.ie. Dominic, we'll have to get suited and booted and ready for our big visit, and we'll have to be figuring out what photo we'll have to be giving to Mr. Biden when he comes.
We might give him a lighthouse.
A lighthouse, what an idea.
Actually,
yeah.
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 You know?
Yeah. Yeah,
but we let the listeners decide.
Exactly. All right, Dominic, and we'll be on before he comes anyway again, so we can be chatting about that, and hopefully we can get him on for the few minutes as well. Would be absolutely fantastic. But thanks to our Kerry man in the White House, Tim O'Sullivan, we had the in and we're away.
Great. Thanks to Tim.
That's Dominic Walsh there, for our monthly In Focus photography slot, and he'll be back the first Saturday of the month. Now it is coming up to Easter, and there's a very special walks taking place in Kerry as part of Pilgrim Paths Week over Easter, and they're taking place around the country, but there are specifically ones in Kerry as well. And John G. O'Dwyer, no stranger to this programme, there isn't anything he doesn't know about the Pilgrim Paths. I caught up with him during the week to talk to him about this. John, tell us what's taking place over the Easter bank holiday weekend.
Well, it's about something that's very suitable for Easter, really, and that is Pilgrim Paths Week. And I suppose enormous of people still don't know that we have such fine and ancient pilgrim paths in Ireland, much older than the Camino. So what we have going ahead over the Easter period is we have a walk on Good Friday down there in Knocknadobber, which is right down in the middle of, it's right down near Cahir Sivean. It's on the Kerry Way. So there's a guided walk up the ancient Pilgrim Mountain of Knocknadobber. And then on Saturday, there are actually three pilgrim walks, and one of those is out past Dingle. It's on the ancient Cusson and Ave to Mount Brandon, and that's a guided walk as well as that. So there, and there's also a walk then up in Wicklow on Kevin's Way. Then there are three walks again then on Monday associated with along the Irish pilgrim paths. There's one in the Tuathair Fáilric in Mayo, Loch Derg up in Donegal, and Scattery Island in Clare. And then down near you again, and in the down not too far away from where from Kerry, is Gugan Barra, and there's a walk to Gugan Barra then, and that's taking place on the 15th and 16th. It's a 2-day walk from Drimaleague to wonderful Gugan Barra.
Very good. And where can people get more information on the walks, or do they have to book, or do they just show up, or how does that work?
Yeah, well, in general, you have to book, but the best thing to do is to get onto pilgrimpath.ie. Everything is up there. In the case then of St. Declan's Way, which is a route that I'll be walking on myself over Easter, you can actually go on to stdeclansway.ie directly. But all the information, I say, the first point of call is pilgrimpath.ie, and then look at Pilgrim Paths Week.
Very good. And just, I know we've discussed this before, but tell us, where did the pilgrim paths come from? How did they originate?
Well, they originated to an extent for me. I mean, not in the sense we always had the pilgrim paths, but I think it was a resource we had neglected, and I didn't know much about them either. And then there was a publisher in Cork called the Collins Press, and I'd written a couple of guidebooks for them, walking guidebooks, and then they came back to do another guidebook, and I thought, this is great, what do you want me to do? And they said, we'd like you to do the Pilgrim Paths of Ireland. And I said, oh my God, hold on there now, I don't know anything about that. This was about 12 years ago, and I said, I'll have to think about it. And they said, okay, think about it. So eventually I thought about it, and I came back and I said, look, the walking title for this book will be Sinner on the Saints Road. In other words, that is somebody who was doing these paths who didn't know an awful lot about them. But when I did them, I suppose I felt very much, became very infatuated with them. It was a very wet summer, actually. It was 2011, but I did all the paths from down from Slemish all the way down, of course, down to Kerry as well, to Skellig Vihil out there. And I thought, this is wonderful. And I thought, but no, I met so few people walking there. And I thought, everybody's going off to Spain, to the Camino, and we have such great paths in Ireland. So I bounced it off a few people. They were very positive about doing something about it. I contacted all the groups that were involved with the Pilgrim Paths. They came together then at a meeting in Nina and formed Pilgrim Paths Ireland. And it's gone from strength to strength since.
Yeah, wow, amazing. I'm just looking at the walk on Good Friday, Knocknadubber. Is that the Stations of the Cross, or is it just, you know, a walk?
No, well, it's the Stations of the Cross. Mm. So it will be a guided walk up by the Stations of the Cross to the summit of the mountain. Now, there's also a pilgrim passport, and there are five routes in that form the Irish pilgrim passport to get 120 kilometres. And the walk up Knocknadubber then is part of that. But you only have to go a little over halfway to actually get the stamping point for your passport. So it will be, I think, a question of it being led. And if people, you know, just want to go, I think as far as the stamping point, that's absolutely fine. But my God, I know you probably know it as well. But, you know, and maybe I'm talking to converter with Kerry people, but to me, on a clear day, the view from the top of there is the finest in Ireland.
Yeah, it's absolutely stunning. It's all
artistic with it, you know. It's a clear day.
It is, very much so. And I hear you have a new book coming out, and you promised me you might come on again in the near future.
Well, what happened was, I think we had the idea, I worked on it during the lockdown, 50 best Irish walks. We felt there was going to be a big demand for walking after lockdown. We were right. So I brought out a book last May, and it sold out by January, 50 Best Irish Walks. So I had a look at it again then. Now, I've already done a book on the Pilgrim Paths of Ireland, and I had done that. I spoke about that there earlier. And all the pilgrim paths were in it, except St. Declan's Way. And the reason was, even though it's an ancient path going back to early Christian times, it hadn't been reopened at that stage. But it reopened in 2021, so I decided then to incorporate that into the 50 Best Walks. The publisher was happy to to do it. So there's a full day-by-day account now in the new edition of the book, which has a new cover, but it's still 50 best Irish walks, but it incorporates a full pictures and a map and a day-by-day explanation of the left and right turns and a bit of the history along the way as well. And of course, that's very, very good as well, because that's the one Irish walk that you can do a walking holiday on. It's generally a 6-day walk, so that's similar to what most people do when they go out to the Camino.
Excellent, and we look forward to bringing you on in the future to talk about that in a bit more detail, because we love having you on here on the programme. But best of luck Easter weekend, and once again, John, where can they go if people want to know more information?
pilgrimpath.ie, or if they're particularly interested, maybe some of the Kerry people might abandon the kingdom for a short while and come up and do St. Declan's Way. You'll get very specific details on stdeclansway.ie, but I think your first port of call is pilgrimpath.ie.
Very good. Well, happy walking, John.
Gotta be the Mahagud. John.
Yeah, happy walking, and happy walking to all of you that will be walking over the coming weeks and months. But the Pilgrim Paths, it's an amazing initiative, and it's a great website, actually. I was on it there last night, and John Geodewyer is a font of knowledge, and it's always great to have him on. I look forward to having him on in the near future as well to talk about his books. Connachtan Dubber is just stunning when you get up there. It's worth the walk, and a lot of them aren't they, our walks that we have here in the Kerry Way and all that, when you get up to the heights and you look out, and if you have a clear day, there's nothing better. I did it there a few years ago, Connachtan Dubber, and I remember we got up to the top and it was absolutely stunning. You can see a lot of the county from there. It's fairly impressive, but the mist came in fairly quick and we had to move fairly quick as well, and that's the other thing. It's just to be careful as well, and you know, abide by best practice when you're going on any of these mountains as well. Always tell someone when you're going and bring people with you and have a communication device as well. Tell people when you're expected to come back. Good morning, Joe and Dominic. 'Tis better you're getting. Dominic, you're some teacher. Your detailed, helpful information helped me enormously during the COVID lockdown. I think a pic of a lighthouse would be a wonderful present. Light to the world. Happy Easter, Agnes. And that's in reference to what we'd give to Joe Biden when he comes to Kerry on his visit, and thanks a million for that, Agnes. Now we're going to go to a break, and after that we have another very special documentary series. It's our second volume of Kerry Women in Sport, and we'll be hearing from Molly O'Sullivan. And Molly has represented Ireland on the international stage and more recently started work as a strength and conditioning coach on the professional tennis circuit.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
Yes, and I hope you're enjoying the programme so far. 066-712-3666. Martinez, take your calls. 083-300-3300. You can email me, jmcgill at radiokerry.ie. I'm on Twitter and Facebook. JoeMcGill121 will find me there. And thanks a million to everyone who sent in those wonderful photos for our photography slot. You can send your ones for next month before the Wednesday, before the first Saturday of the month. Midday Wednesday, before the first Saturday of the month. And the theme for this month is Eggs-cited. So you can theme that around Easter with your eggs or something that excites you. So that is your theme. So go forth and prosper. And tell us the stories behind the photo as well, and the reasons, you know, you went for that photo as well. We love to hear that as well, Dominic and I. Hi, Joe. Charles here. Delighted yourself and Dominic are getting to meet President Biden. A photograph of an All-Ireland winning Kerry team would be a good gift for him. But I would say that comes in from Charles. Thanks a million for that, Charles. Yes, we're very excited about that. Now, we are going to be playing a number of documentaries over the summer period coming forward. And one of them we mentioned was the Lighthouses of Kerry. We're also going to have another wonderful series called Family Food Businesses as well. It's about that. It's called Blasts of Kerry. And we have met some wonderful people, wonderful family businesses that have been here for years in the county, that have been immersed in the community and have provided such valuable employment as well in the county. And I'll be telling you about those soon as well. But this documentary that we're going to start here on the programme this morning is called Kerry Women in Sport, and this is our second series of this. So this is going to be 10 episodes over the next few weeks. We're going to be playing an episode per programme, and each episode highlights a particular Kerry sports woman. And we did the first series, Connie Broderick and I, we had 20 episodes, and we thought we need to do another one of these because we didn't get to a lot of people we want to get to, and we still haven't got to everyone we want to get to. There's so many talented and accomplished sports people out there. So we're starting off our first episode this morning by featuring Molly O'Sullivan, a Ballyhare native. An accomplished rower, Molly has represented Ireland on the international stage and more recently started working as a strength and conditioning coach on the professional tennis circuit. So have a listen to this. This documentary was produced by Connie Broderick and Joe McGill. It was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.
Sport is my life, basically, to be honest. I don't think I'd be where I am today, like, if I didn't have sport. Like, there's so many aspects of sport that make it just best thing really that you can do for yourself.
In this episode of Women in Sport, we hear the story of Ballyhare native Molly O'Sullivan. An accomplished rower, Molly has represented Ireland on the international stage and more recently started working as a strength and conditioning coach on the professional tennis circuit.
My very first sport that I was involved in and still am is actually show jumping. With horses, I've had horses my whole life, still do. And I started show jumping when I was 4 years old. And I literally just haven't stopped now for 20 years. And I have three horses at the moment. One who I compete as much as I can on them. And then I suppose my two older brothers as well were very heavily involved in sport, both of them rugby players as well. And now Leonard owns a gym in Killarney and my other brother working in professional rugby in France. My father played rugby all his life and my mom used to do rowing. And then I went to Clorgan secondary school in ISK and I actually didn't really know anyone. And someone, I can't really remember, I think someone invited me to go down to Clorgan Rowing Club when I was like 11. And then I made all my friends down there basically. And then it just went from there. I never left then for another like 5 years after that. And yeah, it was just a really nice place, I suppose, to socialise and get fit and you get to compete. And when you start to get good at it, then I suppose it starts to become addictive nearly, and you're training, you know, twice a day, every day. And the majority of the time for me, I was part of a team and a quad or a double. I represented Ireland at Holmes International in, I think it was 2019, if I'm not mistaken. And I was in a women's senior four. And then 2 years ago, I went to a Calorian to the World Coastal Rowing Championships in Portugal, and I was in a quad with the other Clorgan girls, and we came fourth. And then we'll say at the Irish Championships, we actually won the senior ladies quad. They were kind of the two things I grew up with, rowing and horses.
Molly always wanted to work in sport, so after finishing school, she studied law and psychology in the University of Limerick with the aim of becoming a sports agent.
I knew I wanted to be involved in sport, but to be honest, I actually didn't get the point that I needed to get into the course I wanted initially. I actually applied, I think, physiotherapy was my number one on the CAO, and I think, God, it was close to 600 point time, like it was really high. But I got my second choice, which is not related at all, in law and psychology in UL. So I actually went through 4 years of law and psychology, and it kind of shifted then my plan throughout the undergrad was, I really enjoyed law and I was thinking of becoming a sports agent. And then in my final year, I was very lucky actually to come across this lecturer who was really involved in sports law herself. And I did my final year project with her, and I did it on gene doping, like doping in sports and how they can alter DNA and things like that to make you more athletic. And when I was finished, I actually met with her, and she kind of asked me, what are you going to do? What's the plan? What are you going to go do next? And I said, geez, I really don't know. I don't know whether to stay in law, or I don't know whether to go on and do what I actually want to do, which is sports and strength and conditioning. And I suppose like the safe thing to do for me at that time would have been go and become a lawyer or continue on my studies, go to Blackhall in Dublin. And she kind of steered me the opposite direction, actually. She said, you should go do what you want to do. And if it doesn't work out, you'll always have this degree. You can always come back, you know, and do it again. So, yeah, I'm actually very grateful to her for giving me that advice. So I went on then and I applied for the Masters of Sport Performance in UL. And I really, really enjoyed it. Like, we had athletes come in and we had to, you know, test for VO2 maxes and blood testing and learning all about, you know, blood doping and strength and conditioning programming, all the different sport. Yeah, no, it was actually a really good course. I'd highly recommend it to anyone who's interested in it. And it was ideal as well because I suppose Munster Rugby is on campus as well, and they bring you up to see that site and see the players training and things like that. One of the lecturers that I had for that course, Catherine Norton, she used to be full-time sports nutritionist with Munster. So you're dealing with people who have already, you know, they've been working in it and they know what it's like, and then you're learning from them. So yeah, it's a really good, really ideal scenario. So I did know going into the course that, like, professional sports was the end game, always was going to be. I wasn't really going to settle for anything less. I didn't want to work in sport if it wasn't professional, basically.
After completing her Masters in Sports Performance, Molly started work as a strength and conditioning coach with the Irish swim team.
When I did graduate from UL, there was one day where the director of the course sent out an email saying that Swim Ireland, the national swim team, was just looking for a strength and conditioning coach for the, like, academy, we'll say, like, the, not the senior swimmers, just the up-and-coming swimmers, I suppose. So I actually applied for that and I got it. So that was my first job, was with the national swim squad. I was head of the development squad and I was assistant with the senior swimmers, we'll say. COVID kind of came in, so I was doing all that online. So what I used to do was, they would be training every morning at 7 a.m. in UL Sport. They have two development areas. There's one in Limerick and one in Dublin. So yeah, they would train at 7 a.m. They'd be in the pool before they'd come to me. But I think they got in the pool around 5:30, and they'd be swimming for an hour, 2 hours. And then they'd have a snack, a change, and they'd come up to the gym. And I'd have them then for about 60 minutes. So you're basically just programming each athlete differently, to be honest. You might have one that's coming up that has phenomenal power, but he doesn't have the aerobic base and he needs to get fitter. So then with that, you might work on conditioning. And then you might have the opposite, and another athlete that will come up that has a phenomenal aerobic base but can't lift. So you're working on strength there. So it's literally just trying to get everyone well-rounded, but there's no one the same, you know. Everyone's on a different level, so some have injuries, some are just coming back into fitness, some are doing rehab. So they come in, you have all their programs ready, and they look for their name, take it, and off they go. And then you kind of spend the session then monitoring them, and then as they leave, they give us like an RPE, which is like a rate of perceived exertion on a scale of 1 to 10, and then you monitor their load. So if someone comes in and they said that session was a 10, but I programmed that to only be maybe a 5, then you can tell, okay, he's tired, maybe we should lighten it off for the next 2 days to bring him back. And it's all about kind of getting them stronger, but also kind of rounded as you can, athlete-wise, performance-wise. But I really, really enjoyed it. And it was just a shame that, like, COVID hit. It ruined everything, I suppose, in terms of working with them. But I was still with them, I think it was nearly a year. And my boss there actually, someone else got in contact with her, and I called Ian Jones looking for a female strength and conditioning coach, and she recommended me to him. And then from there, I actually ended up going up to Ian to Bishopstown GAA, actually, in Cork. I was working with footballers there for a while. And Ian himself had come from the NFL in America, which was, obviously, like, I dreamed of working in the NFL, but I didn't think it was like a realistic dream, we'll say. So when I heard that Ian was looking for someone, I was nearly jumped on it. Like I learned more from Ian than I had learned in, I'd say, 2 years, you know, in the space of 6 weeks with him. And he's just a fella from Cork who, he went over to America when he was, I think he said he was 19, and he didn't come back there until last year, and he's married now and everything. So yeah, he worked with a range of sports as well. He worked with, I think it was USA Rugby, or it could have been Canada Rugby. And he also worked then with the Cleveland Browns and the Houston Texans as a strength and conditioning coach. So yeah, like, his knowledge and just the way he was able to contain a team. Like when you 40 lads inside in the gym, it's no easy task to try and organise them all and get them all listening to you. The way he was able to get their attention nearly. I'd never seen it before. They just like, they all shut up. They all just listened to him, you know? And it's because they respect him, like just the same I did. It's just earning people's respect and earning that you know what you're doing nearly. But I learned a lot from him and the way he's able to kind of control a team, I suppose. So yeah, the majority of my job again would have been just making sure everyone's lifting correctly and I suppose having a good way of communicating with everyone that works for them as well. So yeah, that was kind of how it all worked out. And then with Ian, then someone messaged him again, like it's all word of mouth, I think, all these jobs. And someone messaged Ian saying you were looking for a female strength and conditioning coach for two tennis players, and he kind of sent it to me, and it was all kind of history from there.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
Realising her dream of working in professional sport, Kerry woman Molly O'Sullivan started work as the strength and conditioning coach for the number one female tennis player in Turkey, Aybek Oz.
The actual tennis coach got in contact with Ian and he asked him his opinion of if he knew anyone. And then Ian kind of sent me a voice note on WhatsApp saying this opportunity was there and that I would need to travel to Turkey, to Istanbul, because that's where they were from, and meet them and sort of go through a trial process. I said yeah straight away, and then he put me into contact with their coach, who is he's Turkish but he's lived in America his whole life, so they all had perfect English. There was no one there that couldn't speak English. So then I met him a few times on Zoom, and then he organized me to go over there. I think it all happened very fast. I think it was only a week or two after Ian actually offered me to go that I went, and went there for a 2-week trial, going to various tournaments. So I was in Istanbul for like maybe 2-3 days, and then we went to Nottingham to a tournament, and then to Sweden, back to Istanbul. And then it was sort of like, okay, you can stay on for another 2 weeks because we liked you for this 2 weeks. We want to trial another 2 weeks, see how you go. Because like when you're traveling with these people, you could be gone for 3 months at a time. 2-week trial is nearly too little. And as he said, you know, it was a trial for them to see if they like me, but it was also a trial for me to see if I like the lifestyle, because it's not for everyone. You know, you're living out of a bag, you're just moving constantly, and you're never really home either, I suppose. So yeah, I stayed on then for another 2 weeks, and we actually got to go to Roland Garros, the French Open. That was very cool. So I was gone to that month, and they offered me a job. And like, I didn't just arrive into this role and they just trusted me straight. You know, it took a while actually to gain their respect and their trust, which I liked about them, because then when I did have it, I knew they're not just going to take advice from anyone, you know. I'd never had any experience of professional tennis or anything like that. And like, but after you spend a while just watching sport and just doing your job, like doing your research, you know straight away what they need to do, and you know what the injuries are, and you know where the weaknesses are. And every sport's kind of similar in some way. Rugby, football, soccer, they're all similar in one aspect, that they're an intermittent sport, like, and they all need good footwork, things like that. Tennis is the same. Tennis players actually, and we'll say soccer players, would have similar drills with their footwork and things like that. So they all come into each other, I think, in some way. Like, obviously, they all have their specificity as well, but yeah, in that sense, they kind of are similar in some sense as well.
With the intense nature of the professional tennis circuit, Molly must carefully manage Aybek's physical and nutritional needs in order to maximise her performance on the court.
It's actually really, really tough. It was the one thing I actually found the toughest to kind of get used to. I for the first week or two, I was nearly like, Jesus, like, how are they doing this? They literally could be playing a tournament in France for 3 weeks, and then they'll have to fly over to Australia and play the next week, you know. And like, it's getting used to all that and different food, and it's very, very difficult. So like with tennis players, they have their season is like 11 months in the year. You have to continue to play, because if you want to be ranked high enough to play in the Grand Slams and things like that, each tournament have points basically, and the more points you get, obviously the higher rankings you will get. So they're kind of under constant pressure be always on the go. And I suppose their pre-season isn't ideal either, because they have maybe 1 week where they'll go on a holiday, maybe 10 days maximum where they'll go on a holiday, and then they come back and their pre-season is maximum of like 14 days. So you have literally 14 days to get them as strong and as fit as possible. And then after that, you spend 11 months just maintaining that. That's it. Like, you're just trying to actually just keep them fit for the next 11 months, no injuries. If it's a week before a tournament, we don't do much strength work, because it obviously, when you train strength, it tears the muscles and it requires a lot of recovery. So we'll say they usually hit every day for 2-2.5 hours, and then it'll be every other day then for strength work. So they might hit on a Monday of 2-2.5 hours, and they'll do conditioning after that. So they might do 30 minutes of sprints basically. And then the following day, they'll do the same. They'll hit 2-2.5 hours and then head to the gym and do some accessory work or like strength training. Nothing too heavy, just literally maintaining what they have already built up. And that's basically it then. And then maybe the day before the tournament start, they might only hit for an hour. So it's not like other sports where you do like a big taper. They don't have that really. They have to keep going as much as possible. Nutrition is a huge part of it for sure. Like, I actually just finished my master's in sports nutrition. I started that 2 years ago. So I think that it used to annoy me actually as a strength and conditioning coach when players used to come into me and they might be really, really fit and strong, but they couldn't perform because they hadn't ate enough or they didn't know what to eat or things like that. So that used to really annoy me. So that's actually one of the reasons why I decided to go away and become a sports nutritionist as well. And that really stood to me when working with the girl tennis players, because you just have to watch, I guess, the rules and regulations. Like, in Europe, there's a regulation that the meat can't be injected with a certain substance. So when you're in Europe, it's nearly easier because you don't have any struggles with doping. Say there's a lot of tournaments in Colombia who don't have this rule, and they inject, I think it's mostly red meat, they inject cows with this substance, and if the players eat it, they will come up as doping. That's one of the issues, and one of the girls actually won't eat red meat now because of it, which I completely understand. So we mostly eat just chicken, turkey, pasta, just trying to keep it as basic as possible. And then all the sports supplements they take have to be third-party tested. They're all informed sports. So we travel with all the supplements, so we usually don't leave without all the supplements that we need. And usually I actually bring them from Ireland, to be honest, but it's nearly easier for me to get them. So we use all SIS supplements, and then when they're in a match, they have a time frame. So I did out like a plan for them during a match. And all of the plans are for, like, we always assume the match is going to go at least 3 hours. It might only go 50 minutes or 90 minutes, but you have to always expect the unexpected. So they kind of fuel every hour with a gel, and they have a hydration plan as well, and they have recovery powder for afterwards. And then you're at the bigger events, at the bigger tournaments and like the slams and stuff, they all have like the food hall is created by nutritionists, so it's ideal scenario, so you don't really need to worry about food in those places.
Since linking up with IPEC, Molly has travelled to international tournaments around the world, including the prestigious Wimbledon and Roland Garros. But it was the US Open at Flushing Meadows that stands out.
I loved the US Open. I think it was one of the nicest events I'd been to, because with the other slams, the main draw, so the player I work with, IPEC, she's ranked around 150 in the world. And if you are maybe top 60, top 50, you will be in main draw for those events. But everyone else, maybe up to 150, 160, you don't get in after those rankings usually. You go into a qualifying event. So the first week of the event is for qualifiers, but with Wimbledon and Roland Garros, the main draw players aren't usually there until the main draw starts. But with US Open, they're all there really early. So like Naomi Osaka was walking around, Nadal, Andy Murray, Danielle Collins, and like Serena Williams, they were all there. So I met Nadal and I met Serena Williams. So it was really cool. Like, it was one of the nicest events, actually, yeah.
Following a whirlwind couple of years, what are Molly's hopes for the future?
Like, I'd like to continue in tennis for another while. I think I've gained like really, really valuable experience, not only in strength and conditioning and nutrition, but also just like in life when you're obviously traveling and you're dealing with different circumstances. They're not circumstances you come across a lot, like. But yeah, I think other sports, I think for me, for sure, the NFL, as I've said plenty of times, is one that I'd love to go into, either in strength and conditioning or nutrition. I don't mind either. Like, I'd love both sides of it. So now that I'm qualified in both, yeah, I would love to go to America and work in one of those major leagues, I think, in the future.
That's an episode, our first episode of our second series of Kerry Women in Sport, and that is Molly O'Sullivan. And what a wonderful ambassador she is to this county as well. So accomplished, and we wish her all the best in her future career, because it's only beginning there as well. That was produced by Connie Broderick and I, and we will be playing the other episodes of that as we go, featuring more wonderful Kerry Women in Sport. We'll have more after the break.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
Happy 95th birthday to Nora Kelly, Ard and Nina Killarney. Enjoy your celebrations from your neighbours and friends. Happy birthday, Nora Kelly, 95 years of age. Save me some birthday cake. Now, at the start of the programme, we reveal this brilliant news that we got an email during the week from the White House, of all places, because Tim O'Sullivan, or at More Man, works in the White House. He used to listen to our podcast when he was back on holidays, our In Focus photographer. Up with Don McWalsh. He showed it to another man who is into photography. That was Joe Biden. And Joe Biden is coming, as you know, to Ireland very soon, and he's coming to Kerry. Well, before I go any further, let's look at the date. What date is today? I see it here in front of me. It's the 1st of April. Does the 1st of April mean anything to you? Well, that should explain that story. It's a bit of a joke, lads. It's a bit of a joke. Now, some of you were onto it straight away, and others, not so much. So some of you had your coffee this morning or were up early, and I couldn't call out all these messages during the programme or to give it away, so I better call them out now. Good one, Joe, for the 1st of April. That comes in from Eileen. Love your show, and love Radio Kerry from Joan Crimmins 3. Keep up the great work. April Fool's, boys. That comes in from Brenda Clifford. Great April Fool joke, lads. Someone else came in on that as well. How about a photo of an April Fool for Joe Biden? That comes in from Maureen. Hard to fool you, Maureen. What photo specific to Kerry to give to Joe Biden when he is here should be the unique Paps of East Kerry. So unique, with so much tradition amongst the rugged Kerry Mountains. It would be a perfect thank you to the Ratmore O'Sullivan, who employee in the White House that brought Joe Biden's attention to your Saturday Supplement program in the first place. May Day and the rounds to the city at Shrone at the base of the Paps. People still go there. It's unbelievable. And that comes in from Mary. President Biden is visiting all of West Kerry too. That comes in from Burr. And to get to a few more of your texts, geez, we had an avalanche of texts here this morning all about Joe Biden. You have the best program. Oh, thank you for that. I can't read that out because it'll only make me embarrassed. Is that an April Fool's Day joke about Joe Biden? Yes, it is. Last night, I heard that the White House had made inquiries to Kerry Airport about Air Force One landing there, but because the runway is 200 feet short for a safe landing, Joe will not be coming to Kerry. Because it's from John. Oh, lads, come on. It's 1st of April. Can ye do better than this? Ooh, someone not too impressed there. Good morning, Joe and Dominic, tis better you're getting. And another one here. Hi, Joe. Really enjoying the show. And Molly O'Sullivan, and that's a good text about Molly O'Sullivan. What a very impressive woman. She will be a superstar in the strength and conditioning field, and that is a true. So many more messages about our April Fools, but come on, we have to have a bit of crack, don't we? April 1st. I think it was like 7 years ago since April 1st fell on this programme, I think. Maybe I could be doing the maths wrong. We did it April Fools before. That was a bit controversial as well, but if you can't have the crack, what can you have? And into the April Fools fool the leg of the stool the first day of April. So enjoy, if you are doing April Fools or whatever else, enjoy that. They mightn't be up yet and you might catch them out. I'll be back again next Saturday. My thanks to Abigail Bernard, who was on sound. Francis is on the way, so keep it here on Radio Kerry.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.